got you shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it's sink or swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it's sink or swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. Welcome to the shrimp tank, word to Chris Hanks. Before to put it all together, this is big thanks. Doing big things, chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real, this life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream, all the dudes yell. This is just what I do and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, well homie keep going. You know the saying, you gon' reap what you sow in. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, roadie 2016, like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a general from the front, I'ma lead the charge. Like a federal, fell on my lap, never going hard as ever. The results match.
Hey, everybody, good morning, and welcome to the Shrimp Tank right here on the Business Radio X Networks in Sandy Spring. I'm Ted Jenkin, your co-host, sitting here with my co-host, Chris Hanks. I'll bring in just a minute. We're going to be joined today. We've got a special guest host here today, Kurt Arsenault. And we've got our featured guest today, Cho Nguyen. We're going to talk about HireWire today and the great things going on inside of that company. What do we do here in the Shrimp Tank? Well, every single week, we get to interview some of the brightest and best CEOs in and around Atlanta and across the state of Georgia. I tell you what, in Atlanta, entrepreneurship is booming. And we get to learn how these businesses grow, how they run, how the entrepreneurs think, and we find out whether or not their business will swim or it will sink in the tank. Now, for those of you that don't know what's going on at Kennesaw State, it's unbelievable stuff, which is really the reason we started this program, is for the kids, the future entrepreneurs of tomorrow. And Kennesaw State actually now has an accreditation in entrepreneurship, which means you go to school for 4 years, you actually get a degree as an entrepreneur. And we know today that whether you're going to succeed in a corporation or you're going to succeed as an entrepreneur, you need to have those skills to take yourself to the top. So, Chris, what's going on at Kennesaw State right now? I understand that we're getting down to the final stretch of the KSU 100. What's happening with that?
Yeah, only 12 people left. And after 12 tonight,
students are left.
There'll be six. So we're going from 12 to six out of the 100 who made sort of the final cut, and close to 200 total applicants.
But what is the dichotomy of these businesses look like that are in these 12? Are any of them really interesting to you? Is it a bunch of ideas?
Yeah, they are. There's several that are interesting to me, and it's hard for me because I get to know these students pretty well. Some of them, not all of them, are my students because we open it up to anybody enrolled at KSU. So not all of them are mine, but I definitely have some bias. That's why I have to remove myself from the judging.
You do, right? Huh?
So yeah, I have to stand on the sidelines because there are definitely some folks.
Can you name some of the businesses that are going to be in it? What kind of businesses are going to be in there? Are the smoke shop guys going to be in there?
Smoke shop guys who were guests. They're doing amazing. How do you get students who are doing, what, over $5 million in revenue?
I mean, $5 million in revenue,
that's pretty fantastic,
six smoke
right?
shops, and they're still in college.
Yeah, absolutely. And we had also Brian Keller on the show.
The Keller Guitars.
Keller Guitars, which is pretty amazing for a kid to manufacture guitars like
right.
he's doing.
Fender used to be big. Hell, Fender's going to be nothing when the Keller comes out. And these are ones that I understand are guitars.
And yeah, really, and you have Rhodey, who did our rap. He's still in.
And the so Rhodey rap
He's final 12.
And what is his business?
Absolutely.
He's a rap mogul?
He's a rap mogul,
he thinks
man.
He's going to be the next Eminem?
The next Sean Puffy Combs, or insert name here, with P. Diddy. Diddy.
Does he actually have a name more than Rhodey? Did he give himself like three nicknames?
No, he's just going with Rhodey. But, you know, I think as you get more money in the rap world, you can start changing your name.
He doesn't call himself Yeezy yet or anything else? He doesn't nothing like that right now?
No, not yet.
But how does one become a rap mogul? How's that going to happen? He's got to get some rap hits.
Well, I think first you start rapping and then you start moguling.
I see.
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
You rap first, like Little Dicky did. You get some stuff going. You get 30
exactly.
million hits on YouTube.
Yeah, exactly.
Create a rap video for nothing, and then you become a mogul.
Yeah, you rap first. I think that's the sequence. Rap first, mogul second.
I got it now. Now, I understand we talked about this a little bit, but I really liked you to tell people today, you know, what's great about America, and we can't wait to interview our CEO today so you can hear about a real success story, but a lot of other countries that are out there, and a lot of people don't see this every day, simply are not on pace with where America is when it comes to entrepreneurship. And you had the opportunity to spend some time over in Greece and get a real landscape. Obviously, they can still get money out of an ATM machine, which is good. But what did you learn when you were over there about the entrepreneur world in Greece right now?
Boy, so much. It's really hard for me to be brief about that experience. It was very transformational. what I learned was, number one, we are very fortunate. For people who are listening who feel like, wow, you know, it's hard to start a business or it's hard for me to follow my dreams, we take so much for granted here.
I know.
In a country like Greece, where the government controls every aspect of your life, there's so many good people there are just waiting for permission to do things. And the idea, you come with a message of, you don't have to wait for permission, you can just do. That's something that we can take for granted here. That's a tough message. And helping people understand, you know, our goal was mindset first, skill set second. So establishing an entrepreneurial mindset and framework, partnering with the universities there, institutes there. We did radio there, did TV, and now there's going to be a TV show on the entrepreneurial mindset that'll reach about 1.5 million.
Or no?
We're going to develop content for the TV show since I will be here. But I was on the show that, 2 weeks ago when I was there.
Now, what's the show going to be called? What's the show going to be called?
Entrepreneurial Mindset.
It's not going to be the My Big Fat Greek Entrepreneurial Life or anything like that?
That's actually probably a better title for it.
I would have done that. They should have brought me in for the branding. I would have helped them out.
Yeah. So, certainly pitched the tank while I was there. So that was kind of good. So well, when I was on radio. So
if it all goes downhill for you and I would like to start an Ouzo business with you. We can sell that thing? Here.
Yeah.
We need that here. There's no bar like that or place just to really do heavy shots like that. So, which you need after you teach class all day. You need something like that.
We do.
But we're looking forward to tonight. And I tell you what, these kids are so impressive. We're going to have some of the winners on here. Maybe we get down to that final six. You can hear some of their pitches idea right here on the Business Radio X Networks, on the Shrimp Tank. Remember, always, you can listen to a replay of all of our broadcasts, 100 shows that we've done on shrimptankpodcast.com, or you can download us on iTunes on Shrimp Tank and listen to us in the car. And I've said this before, I don't mean to beat up on terrestrial radio, but when you listen to the car, you can learn some stuff when you listen to us here on the Shrimp Tank. I don't know what you're learning listening to some of the morning stuff today. I really don't know. It's just not good stuff. They seem like all games and things that aren't going to help you. And this is the way that it is. Podcasting is the future of where conversations are going. Now, we want to bring on our CEO today. We got a chance to talk to him a little bit in the lobby before the show today. Very, very impressive story. Cho Nguyen has a company called HireWire. And this is all about, I like this idea that he was talking about. This is sort of like the Tinder meets what? The employment world? Is that really what it is?
No, it's been called Tinder for Jobs.
Tinder for Jobs.
Yeah.
I love that.
But it's also really this concept of on-demand hiring that we're big on that we think is going to be the future.
So how did you come up with this idea for HireWire? How did this business evolve? I know that you've actually done some businesses and sold them successfully, but where did the real concept come by in the marketplace for HireWire?
Yeah, so my last company, we hired almost 20,000 people.
Oh my God.
Yeah, we had a lot of people. And I actually interviewed personally thousands of people myself in the early days before we grew. And so I personally understood the problem and how broken hiring was. Like the idea that you have to post a job and then wait for unqualified people to apply and then figure out who's good or not based on a resume, that just seems like a very inefficient way, but we did it that way. We hired thousands of people, right? And so I knew that even at my last venture, that there was a opportunity here that needed to be addressed. And so my first company was Campus Special, built that up, sold it to a public company a couple years ago. And then on my sabbatical slash retirement, which was short-lived, I was getting really itchy, right? And I had that drive to go do something, slash my wife wanted me to get out of the house. And so...
That's really what it was, wasn't it?
Mainly that, yeah, mainly the latter. But anyway, so I was on the hunt, but I wanted to do something that I could be passionate about, that I had domain expertise in, and something that the world would make the world a better place, right? No one needs another, you know, X product that is just a noise. And so I really tried to be thoughtful about approaching that problem. And when I validated it that with the employers that we talked to, that hiring is actually their number one problem, turnover in hiring, especially in hourly and part-time industries like restaurant, retail, service industry, it was very clear to me that there was an opportunity there. So I validated that and then just aggressively went after it. Had a good co-founder to start with, and we raised some money, and we've been out there for about a year and a half now.
So what exactly is on-demand hiring?
Yeah, so on-demand hiring, and this is why the service industry is so important, the nature of job openings are very urgent, right? So unlike a professional position, let's say, you might have a few weeks, or you could hire them in a month or so. Here, let's say I'm a restaurant operator, and my server or dishwasher quits, which happens often. I don't need that person in a couple of weeks. I need that person today or tomorrow. And so what we've done is using technology and using a mobile first platform, we're able to basically pair people who are looking for work now that are qualified and local with employers who need qualified local people now. And so we're bridging that gap from a process that normally takes a few days or a few weeks to hours.
Now, is it all blue collar type jobs like that? Or is it also, because I think one of the biggest things that companies struggle for is that basic administrative assistant type position. Mm-hmm. It seems like you see thousands of jobs, but no qualified candidates for those jobs.
Yeah, so it's a great question. I think eventually we want to be the hiring source for everybody. But the way we want to do it is with real intense focus and grow in concentric rings, right? So where does it need the highest? Where is there the most demand? And that would be in the hourly and part-time. And within the hourly and part-time, it's restaurant, retail, hospitality. Eventually, as we grow this user base and we have a lot of momentum, we can add these other industries and verticals very easily. And so it's kind of like Facebook. A lot of people may not even remember this, but when Facebook first started, it was college only.
Yeah. In fact, it
was only Ivy League colleges, right? And then they opened it up to all colleges, and then they opened up to high school, and then they opened up to, you know, and so it's hard to boil the ocean. And so even though we want to be the hiring solution for everybody, we're really just trying to kind of start with this smaller focus.
That's niche. What you mean when you say concentric rings, is that you'll start here, you'll figure out that core, and then you'll slowly add on to it.
Yeah, you got it. It's really about spinning the flywheel, and especially when we're a two-sided marketplace, we have to have critical mass, right? So we have to have a lot of employers, we have to have a lot of job seekers. So in the beginning, we just said, let's go after restaurants, and we grew from 0 to 500 to 1,000 to 4,000 restaurants today in Atlanta.
Well, you know, one of the things that you talked about in the lobby, which I think is interesting, and especially for our audience today, future entrepreneurs or current entrepreneurs, is they always have this decision tree about whether I bootstrap my business or whether or not I go raise capital. And it sounded like the first business that you grew and you ran and you sold was bootstrapped. And it sounds like this business, you've taken a different path from a raise or a seed raise of money. Mm-hmm. What made you choose those different paths, and how would you encourage other entrepreneurs to be thinking about those paths as they build their companies?
Right. So this is a very popular topic. So my first company I started from my dining room table.
And, did you really?
Yes. And I was backed by, you might know these guys, it was Visa, MasterCard, and American Express. Yeah. And so—
Never heard of them.
Yeah.
Three amigos.
Yes, exactly. So they were pretty good investors, only asked for interest. But you know, quite frankly, at the time I was 25, I didn't have this amazing resume and Rolodex of investors I could just tap for capital. And so all I knew was to focus on building a good business that had good unit economics that actually was profitable, right? Because there's no funding just to fuel the fire. So that was a business that was focused on revenue and profit and EBITDA. And so as a result, I was able to build that business just from good old fashioned, just grind it out, focus on making money and providing a good service. And over time, that grew. And so it grew to be a great business. And so I exited that business and owned 100% of the equity, which was great. And this company, so fast forward 10 years, this is a much bigger problem that needs to be attacked on a very large, a much larger area of coverage. And it has to be in every major city and eventually global for it to be a meaningful business. And so I knew from the beginning that we could bootstrap it, but it'd be slow, and we want to make sure we win the market aggressively. And so having capital helps you accelerate that process, but it could also be a major deterrent as well, because when you have millions of dollars burning a hole in your pocket, you kind of get less focused on doing, you know, things the scrappy way and the resourceful way, and you kind of throw money at the problem. So So now I've done it both ways, right? First company raised $0. This company, we've raised $4 million in seed funding so far.
Plus, you got investors saying, where's my money?
You know,
they want it back.
Yeah, they do. Luckily, we have great investors who have not only provided capital, but some very strategic ones that have helped move the business along very quickly.
Nice. Yeah. And you were able to raise that all locally, or did you? Because there's that big debate, too, about, you know, do you have to leave to raise significant capital, you know, and go to places like Silicon Valley and all that? But you were able to stay and source local funding?
It was both. And I think, you know, I always encourage people, and I didn't take this advice, so I'm talking to myself here, is that in the beginning, put off raising capital for as long as you can. Because quite frankly, you just don't know what you don't know. And if you can kind of prolong having to raise capital, you're going to have a lot more answers and you'll have questions than when someone cuts you a check from day one, right? So we were fortunate in that my co-founders and I had a proven track record of success. We had domain, we had a killer concept. And so when we went out there, we were able to raise money at the concept phase, right? Sitting at a Starbucks and having nothing. That's kind of rare. And I think most people probably think that that's how it goes, right? Have an idea and then people throw money at you. In this case, we had, you know, certain checkboxes already fulfilled. And so we were able to raise the first $2 million out the gate. And then once we showed meaningful traction, customers, and you know, retention engagement, we were able to raise that second million.
Hey, you're listening to the Shrimp Tank right here on the Business Radio X Networks. Thanks for joining us during your lunchtime here, as always, where we listen to some of the brightest and best entrepreneurs in and around the city of Atlanta and across the state of Georgia. And from time to time, we have the kids on, especially from Kennesaw State, who are the future of tomorrow with their entrepreneurial ideas. You can always catch a replay of the broadcast at shrimptankpodcast.com. or download us at iTunes and just listen to the Shrimp Tank in your car. You can catch a replay of our fabulous entrepreneurs. We're sitting here today with Cho Nguyen, who is the CEO of HireWire. And really, this is, we talked about it as the Tinder for jobs. And I'm curious, you know, when you go to raise this money, and I'm curious, especially a concept like yours that may be, you know, it's a startup concept, you have an idea. For entrepreneurs that are listening, what kind of business plan do you have to have to put in front of the investors? What does it have to look like, the pitch deck, to get someone to want to stroke a $2 million or a $4 million check?
Yeah. So I've spent a lot of time studying this because, you know, I never had to raise money before. So I did what any millennial would do, which is Google how to raise money. And so, you know, there's a lot of good resources out there. Sequoia publishes a very common template of what investors look for. And I think, you know, not just kind of going out there and copying what they have, you have to really understand your business. And so it goes something like this. What is a problem you're solving for is number one, right? If you don't have a great problem that people understand, that's a big, you know, that's big enough to matter, you're probably not even gonna get off, you know, the first slide. And so, you know, then it's, how do you solve it? How do you execute this? What are the solutions today? There's always competition. And so the better you know those slides and that your business in and out in your market, the more convincing it is. Because even though we were seasoned entrepreneurs, we still had to go out and convince our investors that this was going to be a great and big idea for them to cut that kind of size check. So I think that there's good resources out there, but ultimately you have to have a problem that people understand that they can get behind, because odds are it's going to be very, very tough, right? And when you're raising money, that means you're trying to build a big business. And so for us, we kind of just, you know, took that template and then really put our personal touch on it. But more importantly, we believed in what we were pitching and we got the investors to believe.
Interesting enough. I met you at the MIT event. Great event. I have a question for Mr. Hanks first.
Okay.
So we have these vape guys on, right? $5 million
the Cloud
in revenue.
Nine guys?
Yeah.
Cloud
yeah.
Nine.
I vaped with them the other day.
Are the parties at Kennesaw State really that good that they stay in school when they're generating $5 million?
I know. I mean, that's shocking to me. To me,
is it about the parties or?
Yes, not necessarily about the parties. I think it's
an
indication
the
of the
important part.
Do you vape at the parties?
I do not. I do not go to the parties, nor do I vape at the parties.
Mm. Okay.
No, I don't.
As a judge at the KSU, can I attend the parties if I want to? I didn't know the judge attend the party rule.
Are you going to be that guy with the big cup that you never pay for?
I would like to be one of the guys with the beer bong, like an old school, you know, I feel so good when it goes over my gums, you know. I would like to be that guy in one of those parties. I would.
I'm ready for that. I had to ask.
Yeah. No, but I do think it says something about those two students, the brothers, because they work incredibly hard. I didn't know that about them when I first met them, but to go to school like they are, to run a business like they are, these guys work their tails off, and I really respect their work ethic. I've learned to really respect these guys and what they're doing.
It's a good answer. I think it's the parties, though. Cho, question for you. Talk about raising money in Atlanta. I know we talked a little bit and you addressed this at the MIT event. You know, everybody says you have to go to Silicon Valley to get seed money. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate on, is Atlanta a good place to get money now? Does everybody still have to go to Silicon Valley? What's going on?
Yeah. And I'm probably biased in that. So Atlanta is largely B2B focused enterprise software, and we're B2C, right? So we're kind of one of those rare unicorn companies that is focused on consumer, but in Atlanta. And so because of that, there isn't as large of a pool of investors that have that kind of appetite, because most of the stuff here is, you know, enterprise software.
Right.
So for us, we did have to go outside of Atlanta. But, you know, the advice I give is that you don't have to, you shouldn't go to Silicon Valley if you have an idea. You don't need to do that, right? It's a very, very challenging task, because the 1% of all the deal flow, right, in the country is right there. So your competition is very high. And it isn't even necessary, because you probably don't need $4 million in seed to start a business, right?
Right.
You could do it off of $100,000, $250,000, maybe $500K. And you could do that from local angels, friends, family, you know, and relatives, just to get enough traction to prove something. And then you can go after that bigger check size for more institutional, professional investors. And so, you know, I think the thing is, a lot of people just skip that step and they think, okay, I have an idea and I'm going to go to Silicon Valley. That's like the last thing you should do,
right?
In my opinion. Now, if you have the next Snapchat or something like that, then fantastic. Then you'll get a check probably. But for the most part, for the rest of us, we kind of have to show some kind of proof, right? And so it's kind of like a beggars can't be choosers kind of situation. At concept phase, it's just an idea. And so just get enough to get going. And you can do that in other ways, like, you know, self-funding it and getting a loan, or, you know.
Ex-girlfriends.
Oh, yeah. It's a quality place to do it, if they have money, that is. You're listening to The Shrimp Tank right here on the Business Radio X Networks. I'm your co-host, Ted Jenkins, sitting here with my co-host, Chris Hanks, who's the executive director and founder of the Shore Center for Entrepreneurship, booming at Kennesaw State right now. You will want your kids to go there. We've got our guest sit in today as our co-host, Kurt Arsenault. I like those questions today. We've got Cho Nguyen, who is the founder and CEO of HireWire, which is exploding right now. We were talking about what's happening in the business, this sort of the Tinder for jobs. It's amazing stuff. I'm curious now, as we get to our second sort of segment in the program, which is called our Hot or Not, sort of a little rapid fire about thoughts and ideas that you have. And I just start with this question, which is, a hot or not, is it a good idea if you're a startup tech company to be housed in the Atlanta Tech Village? Is that a hot or a not?
I guess that's for me to answer. Yes. I would say yes. And I've been actually all of the kind of startup, not all of them, but the big ones. So Atlanta Tech Village has 300 startups under one roof.
Is that how many are in there now?
Yeah, 300 plus, and then over 1,000 members. So we've been there since we moved, since the day we opened up the company. And it's been great for us in terms of visibility and networking and resources. We also have Tech Square Labs as an investor in HireWire, and they're down in Tech Square, Paul Judge and Alan Nance. And so that's a great space, and I spend some time there as well. And then there's Switchyards downtown. So
yeah, that's Tavani has that space down there, right?
Yep, and Payne. So I'm pro, I'll say hot to all of the startup incubators, because I think that it's important when you go along your entrepreneurial journey that you're not alone, right? And so if you're in your friend's cousin's basement, it's cheaper. But where's the support system, and where are the people who are like-minded thinking about, you know, doing the same thing in different businesses? So we've enjoyed it. I would say it's hot.
Hot or not, angel or venture? Because you're kind of in that in-between phase, right? Yeah. I mean, some of that no man's land, I guess sometimes they refer to it in funding.
Mm-hmm. I think if you're really early stage, angel. Angel for sure. Now, if you can get venture, there's a special reason for that, right? You either have this incredible track record, or you have incredible connections, or you just have a ridiculously great business that has early traction, and you'll get a venture check. So it's much, much easier, I would say, by orders of magnitude, to get an angel check than venture. Now, once you get moving along and you get further into it, venture has, you know, its pros. Bigger network, they can help you raise the next round, check size are larger. And so for us, because we're in the stage we're in, we're about to raise our Series A. We're going after venture funding.
But the initial funding was not venture?
It was angels.
So it was angels. Mm-hmm. And there was no pressure to move. So you said it was outside Atlanta? There was no pressure to say, hey? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the first question they ask you when you get to the Bay Area. It's like, so you're in Atlanta? When are you going to move here?
Yeah, Yeah.
Hot or not, hiring family?
That's going to be a no for me.
That's a not.
Yeah. And I've done it before, and it has worked out. So I shouldn't say it doesn't always work out, but you know, startups are hard. You have more questions than you have answers, and there's lots of moving parts, And so, yeah, I'm just going to say no on that one.
How about a hot or not? Vacation policies. It seems to me, in seeing technology companies like Zillow that just offered a 6-year work for us, 6-week sabbatical program, and a lot of companies moving to these, we just don't have a vacation policy. Take time when you need it. How do you fall on that as a tech company?
Yeah, I've done both, actually. I had a strict vacation policy. We measured PTO. Everything had to be approved at my previous venture. And then we actually switched to unlimited. And then here at HireWire, we have an unlimited vacation day policy too. In both cases, I think it comes down to people. If you hire good people who believe in the mission and are serious about making the business go forward, then you're not going to get abuse, right? If you don't hire great people, then it doesn't matter if you have unlimited policy or strict one. They're not in it to win it, right? And so we have an unlimited policy, but it's not like people are just gone for weeks and months at a time. If they are, then you know, it doesn't work out. So one of my investors always told me that his policy was very strict. You have 2 weeks. You can take 1 week at a time. If you take 2 weeks in a row, then I don't need you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this may seem a little strange, but I was just curious your thoughts.
You're strange, though. So yeah, it'll exactly. Slide by.
You just got back from Greece.
Yeah, exactly. Hot or not retirement? Because you could have not done this. Mm-hmm. So you do this venture. Let's imagine an exit. I mean, how do you feel about the concept of retirement, hot or not?
Yeah. You know, I think for the people who are cut from the cloth with the blessing or disease of entrepreneurship and are entrepreneurial, it's hard not to want to go tackle a problem, right? And so for me, you know, I always knew upon selling my last company that I wasn't going to retire long term. I think taking time off is good to kind of clear your thoughts and just kind of reflect, because what happens is you get in this grind mode, and that could be, you could blink and a year, 5 years, 10 years go by. And so jumping in the next thing is one of the big things I refuse to do after my last exit. And so, yeah, to me, it's, you're only retired until your next venture, when you're like, you know, when you have that entrepreneurial drive in you.
Right. There's a product that you actually get some passion about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to decide if this is hot or not. When it comes to scaling your business, you know, hiring employees, hot or not, hiring fast or hiring, I guess, slow. Is that a hot or not?
Yeah. Depending on how you're positioning it, I would say, you know, hire slow, fire fast.
Okay.
And when I say fire, I don't mean, you know, just throwing people out. I think Netflix has a really interesting culture. It's documented publicly on how they go about hiring and managing and separating, if you will, firing people. And a lot of it comes down to, again, this kind of unified alignment of the mission of the company. And that can't be like 80% of people are good or 75% of people are on board. You really have to have everyone on board aligned with the mission of the company. And so for us, we try to do as much of that before we hire somebody as possible, just to make sure that, you know, everyone's on the same page, because the kind of business we're building, we have to be aggressive. We have to go after it. There's not a lot of time, and you have to have that appetite for something very, very big, right? And so that pretty much means you're going to have to sacrifice, and it's going to be, you know, a lot of, you know, late nights and weekends, and people have to be bought into that. And if they're not, it weakens the company. And so for us, you know, we tend to hire slow and really get to date before we get married with people. And then while we're in it with them, we're very big on core values and culture and just reminding people like why we're here, what we're doing, because it's not a normal 9-to-5 job in an early stage startup. If you treat it that way, then you'll likely fail on your own, or the whole company will fail. And so for us, I think that's true. And, you know, have been great people that we've worked with that didn't work out. Doesn't mean they're bad people. Doesn't mean, you know, anything other than it just wasn't a fit. And because the landscape changes so fast in startups, you have to constantly reevaluate that, right? So if you haven't seen that Netflix culture deck, I highly recommend it. It is awesome.
Yeah. But your model is predicated upon hiring fast, which I find interesting, right? You're trying to solve the problem. Hey, I need somebody today.
Yeah, the product is our mobile app, HireWire, is definitely hire fast. And then internally as a company, you know, full-time hires.
Are there actually pictures on the app? Do you get to see pictures of the candidates?
Yeah, you not only get, so a little bit about HireWire, the product. So as a job seeker, you create a profile in minutes, and that profile consists of picture, job history, location, And then you can even pick when you want to work, what positions you're interested in, how far you're willing to travel. And then there's even video interview, which is really a big deal, right? So imagine you're...
Is there a video interview on there? Because sometimes those pictures, people put them up on LinkedIn and you're like, wow, looks like a great candidate. And they come in, it's like, you're the same picture that I saw on LinkedIn. It's like going on Match.com. You see the stuff, it's terrible.
Right, right. So they say that a picture tells 1,000 words. The video tells a whole story. And the beautiful thing about video for an employer is that I can skip the first round interview because I'm already meeting the candidate, right? So I could be in my pajamas at midnight.
They could too.
They could too, yeah. <That's> Hopefully true. Not, but that happens. You'd be surprised. And I can say, oh, here's a candidate, and I can view them and hit play. And within 30 seconds, I know whether or not this person fits what I'm looking for, and I can skip them if they're not a fit. Or I can bring them in. And so here's what happens. Because we're giving them more visibility than a resume with picture and video and all the other things on the profile, I can do fewer interviews with higher conversion rate. So let me give you a good example. Chick-fil-A, one of our big clients, when they hire through traditional methods, they might hire 10 to 15% of the people they interview because it's all blind dates, right? They have a resume, they bring them in, they keep their fingers crossed, they hope it works out. Here on HireWire, they're meeting the candidate on the app first. And they're only going to bring in people that they know they would actually hire. So their hire rate on HireWire is 75%. And so imagine less time spent vetting candidates, less time spent interviewing, higher conversion
rate. And
there's
no discrimination rules about that? Like just looking at a picture and basically going, nope, you know, and stuff like that. Not that I would do that, but I would say that, you know, there are probably people out there that based upon the name on the resume or the picture that they see, they might say, swipe left. Is that the bad one? I don't know. I don't know the app. But either way it is, you'd swipe the way that you don't want them.
Right, right. And that used to come up a lot before we launched, which it came up every day before we launched. But for whatever reason, after we launched, 4,000 employers later, 100 plus thousand job seekers later, it doesn't come up very often at all. And I think part of it is because we're really replicating a normal interview process that you'd go through anyway, which is I would invite you in and then whatever decision I make, you know, based off of whatever criteria it is I have, happens. But that's all happening on the app. So I think that all we're doing is providing tools for both parties to basically move through the process faster.
Hey, you're listening to the Shrimp Tank right here on the Business Radio X Networks. If you missed the first two segments here with Cho Nguyen today, CEO of HireWire, you really ought to check out the interview. Highly good job today. A lot of articulation around the business and how it works and raising capital, all things that you need to know. How many of you have sold a big business to a publicly traded company? We've had several guests that have done it like Cho, and that's who you want to learn from. If that's what your dream is and be able to build a business and sell it out, I mean, it is an easy thing and it doesn't happen to everybody every day. So it is a process. Now, in the third segment today, we're going to do this sort of plead the fifth section. I don't know what questions that Chris Hanks, who's the executive director and founder at the Shore Center for Entrepreneurship, has prepared today. And Kurt Arsenault is sitting in today as a guest host. I'm sure has some good ones because I know how his mind ticks, which is not good, by the way, but I know how it ticks.
Get prepared.
And yeah, we have to ask those questions today and learn a little bit more about Cho. So I just want to start off in here saying that your wife might have, you know, gently nudged you in the back on the way out to start doing a business again here. Is it a good idea for somebody to marry an entrepreneur? Is that a worthy cause or not a worthy cause?
Yeah, I think the answer is it depends. I believe in full disclosure, right? And so when you're dating somebody, if it was me and I was single, and I would just tell, you know, I would tell the person, listen, this is my passion. I work a lot. I love it. And I may be there, but I'm not there, right? Because I'm thinking about all my problems and issues and opportunities, and I'm constantly in that mode. So is it a good idea? If you can handle that and you know that there will be late nights and long, and weekends, then I think it's a very good idea. To me, I think you almost have to have that. So for me, I've been fortunate. I was dating and then married an amazing woman who pushed me and motivated me and threatened me, no, I'm kidding, to do
probably
really well.
Did. Yeah,
right. And that helps because now it's not just, I'm not in it alone, you know? So I couldn't imagine being an entrepreneur, starting a company and having a significant other that's like, where are you? What time are you going to come home?
Man, that full disclosure might scare some tech entrepreneurs because if you slept with triple digits in women, God, you'd have to disclose that on the date somewhere. So I want to let you know, I've got a lot of money and I slept with a lot of women, you know, that doesn't happen.
Yeah, that you disclose it on Tinder, not on Highway.
So when you've done something that many entrepreneurs never get to do, and that's have a successful exit. So when you look back though on that journey, what's your biggest regret? The thing that you look back on and you go, "Man, I was such an idiot. Why did I do that?"
Yeah. Boy, I don't know if we have a long enough segment for that, of all the things I did wrong. You know, to me, I think one of the most important things is the rate of learning that happens for a founder, right? And you can learn it really slow and then end up, you know, hopefully finally figuring it out or dying along the way, or you can learn really fast. And so I would, looking back, accelerated my learning by basically just tapping into more resources and mentors and people had done it before. And, you know, I was 25 at the time, started the company, kind of felt like I knew everything. And then what I realized was at every stage along the business, there were new things like, okay, now we're talking about scale issues. Now we're talking about technology issues. Now we're talking about hiring issues. You could figure all that out on your own and it can happen, or you could accelerate that by having great advisors and mentors. I really wish I would have done that sooner.
Yeah.
By the end, I had tons, almost too many, but I didn't start that until years in. I probably could have, you know, looking back, done more, faster, better had I tapped into better resources early on.
So you can plead the fifth on this, and if you're listening, you might want to put your earmuffs on.
Earmuffs, kids, earmuffs.
Earmuffs. So everybody's seen the movie Facebook. You know, where they go out to Silicon Valley, they get money and the parties and stuff. You were there in the valley.
Yep.
Is that how it really goes down?
Oh, yeah, totally. No, absolutely not.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. So here is my experience, and I won't plead the fifth on this because I think it's really important. When you go raise money in Silicon Valley, you had better have your eyes completely wide open and be 100% prepared to be humbled, right? Because the VCs, especially good ones, and we met with the world-class top-tier VCs, and we did the rounds, and we have lots of interest from those guys. The thing you don't realize is that all they do is meet with people exactly like you every single day with the next billion-dollar business idea. And so you think you're walking in with this really cool concept that no one's thought of and you're all afraid and secretive. That might be like the fifth time that week they've heard about it. And so they're very, very jaded. It really is like, you know, basically auditioning for a role in a big Hollywood movie, right? It's like next, 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 because they've heard it all. They've seen it all. And the odds of getting funded, you know, you think that everyone's getting funded because every single day in the news, you hear about this huge round, right? Airbnb raises $1 billion round. Every single day you're hearing that. And so you might think that they're just handing it out at the airport. It's a challenge. It's hard work. And you have to have unbelievable traction, combination of traction and execution and market. And there's a lot of variables there. So it's definitely tough, but it's fun.
Let's do one more hot or not here. Hot or not, Snapchat IPO.
Yeah, so I'm actually in the Snapchat IPO, so I got in that because I believe in it. So here at HireWire, we're very forward-thinking about how we market to our audience. And so we were one of the earliest people when Snapchat released geofilters.
Yep.
And so we were like right, I wouldn't say the first week they had it out, we were all over that, and it was really a cool experience. So when I saw it firsthand of how impactful it could be and was very effective for us, you know, I was a believer, and I knew that, you know, and I still believe those guys are going to make a lot of money and revenue in advertising, and they're just barely scratching the surface. So I'm bullish on it. I'm in it, and fingers crossed.
Do you get concerned that all social media platforms, now that Facebook launched Facebook Stories, that they all start to look the same?
Yeah, so that's funny. So I saw that pop up on my Facebook and Instagram recently.
Looking exactly the same, really, very close, besides some facial recognition and stuff like that, they look very similar.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I guess we'll have to see, right? Because, you know, Facebook has 10x or more scale compared to Snapchat.
Right.
So they could win just by sheer volume. But, you know, those things, you just never know, right? The worst idea turns out to be the best idea. And some of the best ideas, you know, you think would be fantastic end up cratering. So let's put it this way. Google has tried multiple different, you know, products.
Yeah, never got there.
And, you know, Google Plus as an example. But the ad business generates probably the 95%+ of all of revenue.
So keep my shares, my 8 shares of Snapchat.
Hey, you do what your broker tells you to do. So before we leave here,
I gotta find a good one still.
Yeah, there we go. I wanted to have a minute here for our audience today because this is a great interview today. We learned a ton today, as we always do with our successful entrepreneurs. For people out there that may be looking for a job and they want to get in as a candidate on the HireWire platform, or there's an employer out there, there's a roofer or a restaurateur that's out there that says, I need to get some help and I need a way to find candidates that I don't have to interview twice or sift through 1,000 resumes. How can they get in touch with you and learn more about joining the HireWire crew?
Sure. So HireWire is a free app that's available on the App Store and on Google Play. So you can download it for free. And we also have a web version that's in beta right now. So our website is HireWire.com. You can download the app to your phone. It's free to sign up for both sides. And what I encourage you to do is if you're looking for work and you're tired of applying to places online, entering the same information over and over, create one profile. And you're basically putting your time and yourself for sale on the open market. You'd be very surprised. If you're a qualified candidate, you will get pinged and notifications very, very quickly. And you know, our goal is to get people hired within 24 hours. So if you're on the employer side, you owe it to yourself to not post jobs on job boards the old way and create a profile and search. There's 100,000 people right here in Atlanta that have created profiles that are ready to work.
Well, thanks for coming on the program today and looking forward to our post-show wrap-up today. And folks, you learned a lot today, but I think the biggest thing that we learned today is that if you're going to create some big, amazing company, you've got to figure out how to solve a problem. And if you can solve that problem, you can probably end up making a lot of money. Thanks so much for listening to The Shrimp Tank. 2 weeks from now, we'll be back. We're off for spring break, and we're bringing on the final students in the KSU 100 2 weeks from now on The Shrimp Tank. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it take a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it take a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.